What is up, everyone? We are recording our first episode of Unpeeling Syracuse Basketball, a Talkin' Orange podcast. We are here as a new addition to the Troy Nunes is an Absolute podcast network. I'm your host, Dylan Finer, and with me today is my co-host, Bobby Manning. We'll be breaking down the week in Syracuse basketball, talking news, breaking down Syracuse's games, looking at the upcoming week, and more. Without further ado, let's talk Orange.
Puts up the shot, it's too long, and Syracuse is your national champion.
All right, so we're going to be breaking down the Syracuse basketball stories from this past week. We're going to be looking at what happened over the course of the week, just news and stuff going on before we start breaking down the games. So first we have Tyus Battle. He won a ton of awards, a lot of national weekly player of the awards, and he also player of the week awards, excuse me. And he also is leading all active ACC players in 20-point games. Bobby, what do you got?
I've been thinking all year throughout every single game, and they wrote about this earlier this year on one of the other sites. What would this team look like without Tyus Battle? And it's scary. It is a very terrifying thought to think about what this group would look like without his consistent scoring, the point guard play that he's added to the equation. I thought that was the coolest thing ever, how they've shared ball time between Howard and him this year to give the different looks. I wrote about that last week. And he is just the lifeblood of this program, and as he wins award after award, he is the most ACC players of the week in a conference as Zion Williamson. And I'm thinking more and more as this season goes on, he's going to go down as one of the more important players in Syracuse basketball history with how he's lifted them up in the post-sanction days.
Absolutely, yeah. We were talking a little bit earlier this season about how Tyus has become like one of the more clutch players in Syracuse basketball history, and we talked about that on the blog a little bit because of all the big shots that he's making. And then this past week, he had 30 points at Duke, or I'm sorry, 2 weeks ago now. He had 30 points at Duke. He had another 20-point performance against Pitt. And he was just playing phenomenally. Just to list off a few awards that he got the Naismith Trophy Men's Player of the Week. He got the ACC Player of the Week. The Lute Olson Award for National Player of the Week. CollegeSportsMadness.com. Yeah, neither have I. Andy Katz Player of the Week.
Andy Katz.
Yeah, and he's sitting right around 1,500 points for his Syracuse career. Could get to 2,000 if he came back.
He's up in the top 50, I want to say, in Syracuse history. So, I mean, he's climbing that list as well. And, you look at the other parts of the game, the draft boards still have him in the 50s at this point. And I'm just like, yeah, he doesn't rebound the ball at the highest rate. His assist rates aren't that ginormous. Defensively, he's been all right this year, whereas in the past he's been more of a higher level defender. I look at it and say there's something to just being able to put the ball in the net. And he's out in the left hand now. He relies on that mid-ranger, but he's still a solid three-point shooter. I mean, he was a 50-40-90 player to start this year. I think he's going to be a quality player in the NBA. We'll see about it. We'll see what his situation is. All those things matter. But I think he has the tools to adapt to the league, whereas some guys in the past haven't with Syracuse.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a larger conversation that we could continue having as this season goes along, and especially as it draws to a close here as Tyus Battle's prospects in the NBA. Of course, we're hoping that that Tyus returns to the Syracuse this year, but I guess we'll consider it a long shot for now. The other news this week, the Duke game is officially a sellout. That game is happening in February. Don't know the actual date.
23rd.
The 23rd. Hope you have your tickets. Should break the attendance record. There are seats being sold on the complete opposite side of the Carrier Dome. Seats being sold for ridiculous prices. So hope you got them before you got to hit the resale.
You're going to pay. I was looking at the SeatGeek map. It's $63 to sit in the opposite corner. So that's behind all those sideline seats that are set up in the back there with the scoreboard.
The makeshift bleachers.
Yeah, so you're looking at it from behind there, all the way from the corner of the dome. It's like you're sitting in a football seat, really. And I'm wondering, what are you doing if you're over there? Are you just drinking beers and hoping to hear a few things because you're not seeing anything.
Yeah, I saw some people on Twitter. I don't know if you saw this, Bobby, talking smack about the Carrier Dome on Twitter, and these people were saying how there isn't a good seat in the house, and that was just lazy takes there. I thought that some people were coming out criticizing the Carrier Dome, but the Carrier Dome's such a great venue for college basketball. I don't know what you got there.
Well, from my media perspective, I have a pretty good seat right behind the basket there, and I'm going to give the Dome a lot of credit because I was watching James up in the arches of Virginia Tech last night, and They don't do the media justice there. You're sitting in the sky watching the game. You can't hear anything. You can barely see things. I mean, we'll see what he thinks about that because he actually lived it. But when you're front row behind that basket, you can hear everything that's being said. You're inches from Boeheim. I'm not going to complain about that. You know, the people that are up in the sky, it might be a different story. I was up there for a concert once. Definitely not a concert venue. But for basketball, if you can pack in 35,000, no one else is doing that, so at the very least, it's unique.
Yeah, get that place rocking, absolutely. So I guess we'll head into the games now. Mm-hmm. We'll start off chronologically.
Two very different games.
A tale of two very different games, indeed. We'll start off chronologically. We know that people will probably want to hear about the Virginia Tech game, but we'll kick it off with Miami, and it doesn't have to be a long discussion here. Syracuse beats Miami 73-53. Syracuse actually got off to a slow start. They were down 17-11 at the under 12 timeout, and Miami threw a zone look out there at Syracuse, kind of similar to what Georgia Tech did, and Syracuse had trouble earlier on.
Yeah, the first thing I notice is Chris Likes out there standing at 5'7". I mean, I've seen Isaiah Thomas play in the NBA, and I think he's a little bit taller than that, but it was astonishing seeing a guy that tall, and he's putting up 18 points a game in the ACC. That team was just depleted, though, and they did put up a good fight early. That's kind of the things you see at the Dome is that Syracuse gets off to those slow starts. It's about whether the other team can keep up with them through the pressure that second half, and you know, fortunately, Syracuse was able to break that 70-point mark and discard of one of the lower teams in the ACC. It really is too bad with Miami because they were one of the more fun teams in the conference last year. Yeah. They had two NBA players in Bruce Brown and Lonnie Walker. Yeah.
Still mad about that, by the way.
So Syracuse did beat them last year, and then they take care of business again this year. What spoke out about that game to you?
Yeah, so we saw Buddy Boeheim emerge a little bit in that game. He was a little bit of a saving grace there for Syracuse. Miami showed that zone look, and what was tough about that zone is that we don't really have many consistent, reliable three-point shooters. And I've given Buddy Boeheim a little bit of grief on Twitter in the past, and it was because he didn't look great with the ball, and his shooting also hadn't been there for stretches. But Buddy Boeheim comes out in this one. I think he shot 4 of 5 from three.
Yeah.
He had 12 points, and he really made it. He made Miami come out of that zone, or at least have to respect the three-point shot, which opened up things inside. So Buddy Boeheim really came through for Syracuse in that one.
And, you know, what the game said to me, of course, Virginia Tech, this all went to the trash, but after building up 7 wins in 8 games, which is what that Miami game did, in an offensive manner, which I was very pleased about, you get the three-point shooting, you get some quality passing to set that up, it spoke to me that this team's finally starting to differentiate itself a little bit. You have shooters in Elijah Hughes and Buddy Boeheim that you can mix into the equation and really shake up the offense. This offense, as tough as they are to watch at times, it's still a million times better than last year, and I think that's where they begin to differentiate themselves a little bit. Boeheim's shooting really changed that game. It gave them a burst through the end of that first half. Elijah Hughes picked it right up when it started in the second half with the corner threes, getting out in transition for some of the looks out there. He's taken a high volume of three-point looks, and how reliable he has been one of the stories of the year for me because he just shows up on a game-in, game-out basis and gives you those double figures, which they didn't have last year. They were relying on Battle to score, Howard to just force points down the other team's throat. You know, Hughes takes what the other guys give him, and he's the third piece in that scoring equation on their good nights.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you were saying, Syracuse really closed out that first half on a strong note. 5 of their 6 field goals to end the first half were actually three-pointers. So Syracuse was really heavily reliant on that three-point ball. A little bit of chucking and ducking there.
That's what they do.
But luckily, the shots were falling. Syracuse heads into the halftime with a 32-29 lead. And then as Jim Boeheim was saying in his post-game press conference, the defense really locked in the second half. Pascal Chukwu, who was a little bit...
he was horrible in the first half. I mean, Boeheim did not leave that to be said at all. I remember he was pointing at Sidibe 4 minutes in and ripping him off the bench because Izundu, I think that's his name, Miami center.
Ibuka Izundu.
Yeah, just tipping out rebound after rebound after rebound. Boeheim said Chukwu just didn't jump, and it's still the story of Chukwu. What are you going to get out of him? The double-figure rebounds, five blocks, are you just going to get drop balls and scrambles on the ground? This is going back a little bit, but I still can't believe the play Trey Jones got injured in that Duke game. That only reason that play happened is because Chukwu just rolled a ball up from under him like a center playing football.
Yeah, that was a funny play indeed. Chukwu locked in the second half. His defense, Boeheim did ultimately give him credit. Boeheim said that his defense was what sparked Syracuse there in the second half, and Thankfully, Syracuse needed to pull away in that one and ultimately discarded of a weaker opponent.
Yeah.
This is the type of performance that Syracuse should have against one of the bottom feeders of the ACC is a 20-point win or at least a 15-to-20-point
win. You got to cover the spread.
Yeah, exactly. We're looking at spreads here. Syracuse actually – so Syracuse did not cover the spread against Virginia Tech.
No,
Syracuse, Syracuse going into that game was 4-1 in ACC play against the spread.
Yeah, and 4-1 total. So they're taking care of business in two ways every single night. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll ask you about the center spot because I know you're a huge Marek Dolezal fan. You know, you've really spearheaded the movement to get him back into the starting lineup. But now he's out again, and he took one shot in that Virginia Tech game, which we'll get to in just a minute. But did you like Boeheim 3-4 games ago now going back to Chukwu at center?
Yeah, so Syracuse couldn't play Marek Dolezal at center against Duke. And then that ended up being one of Pascal's breakout games, right?
Yeah, he was huge.
And so when Dolezal broke out against Duke, or I'm sorry, Chukwu broke out against Duke, it kind of showed what he was capable of and what this team was capable of on the defensive end when it came to getting stops, especially against really strong opponents, and then turning that defense around into offense. And so for those games, Syracuse was also hitting a ton of shots, and it didn't really matter that Syracuse was playing effectively 4-on-5 on the offensive end. We've kind of become used to that. Because Dolezal can offer another element to the offense. But, you know, Chukwu has been playing well. Syracuse had been hitting shots. And then, I mean, we keep alluding to it. We'll talk about that more in the Virginia Tech game. Chukwu's lack of offensive productivity kind of became a problem there in that game against the Hokies. But sticking here with the Miami game just for another minute, Tyus Battle had 9 assists, and you wrote an article, Bobby. You wrote about how Tyus Battle and Frank Howard have been sharing the point guard duties. What's your take on that?
Yeah, in that game in particular, he did post his highest career assist total, but it did sort of come more within the flow of the offense. The Pittsburgh win, which was a nice solid win against a team that's established itself in the middle of the conference this year, he was playing point and setting up nice plays, communicating with Howard. They sort of had this back-and-forth talk on the court about what direction the ball was going to be flowing in. They had Dolezal in the court for a lot of those sets, so they had multiple layers of ball handling. And I thought the ball just flowed so smoothly in that game in particular. And they did have stretches in the Miami game, too, where they were able to work the ball inside and out and get a lot of the three-point shooting that they did. That's another thing that sticks out to me about this team is that they're able to get that ball flowing so much more than they did last year. You don't see it getting stuck on the perimeter as much. You don't see those swings around the perimeter and isolation plays. You still do, but not as high as a level. They're starting to break into this flow more and more often, and I think such a huge part of that in basketball is to have multiple guys who can make those plays on the ball. And they've taken the pressure off Howard, too, and I think Howard's looked better over the last couple of weeks. Even in the Virginia Tech loss, he had a decent shooting game with 33% from three, high and above where he was when he first got back from that injury.
Right, and I don't mean to be a conspiracy theorist here, and sorry if you take it like I am, don't know what to tell you, but is there a chance, hear me out here, that Tyus Battle went to Jim Boeheim and said, "Hey, coach, I'm trying to improve my draft stock here. I want to show, I want to show that I can distribute the ball." Now I'm half joking here, but I want to show that I could distribute the ball and I could take care of the ball. I can initiate offense. And that Jim Boeheim, and I drew up this theory in my head, that Jim Boeheim said, "You know what, Tyus? Sure, we'll give you that shot." And that's when we saw Jalen Carey take a little bit of a back seat. Tyus Battle's playing a little bit more point guard. And Jim Boeheim gives him a little bit of a leash, says, "Hey, Tyus, if you're taking anything away from our team, from our offense, we're scrapping this. You're going to go back to playing off the ball." But Tyus had been playing well at the point guard spot. He was distributing a little bit, as you said, communicating in the pick game. He was making things happen for other players, and yeah, that wasn't...
Yeah. There was one great play where he had a smooth pick and roll to Chukwu, like the cleanest pick and roll ever in the Pittsburgh game.
Yeah.
You never see that.
Right, yeah, exactly, man. And so Tyus hadn't been known as much of a distributor, and all of a sudden he's coming out, handling the ball a little bit more, finding players, helping his teammates out. And so I kind of just drew up this scenario into my head, and you know what, it's probably pretty far-fetched, but it was just something to think about. Like, maybe this is an element of Tyus's game that he's trying to help himself out with in terms of draft stock and in terms of his NBA marketability.
You know, that's a great conspiracy, but I have the true story right here of what actually happened. Every point guard on the roster got hurt, which when you have three point guards is unbelievable to think about. He got pressed into that action in the preseason and looked good doing it against two preseason teams for what that is. And so then Carey comes into play. I don't think Jim Boeheim has liked how Carey has played with
especially
some of the shots
Duke
he's taken. And yeah. Then it's too bad because he had those two 20-point games in New York. And since then, Boeheim has just been on top of him about every mistake, the shot selection, how he's handled the ball, how he's paced the offense. You go back through some of these Jim Boeheim press conferences throughout the year, and he is just hammering Carey. And, you know, he's in that doghouse right now. He's trying to get out, but he is unsuccessful in doing so. There was talk after the Pittsburgh game about, you know, his buddy Boeheim circumvented him on the roster. They don't really play the same position, the same role on this team, and that's actually where that story I wrote ended up getting spawned from. You know, they had Boeheim in there because Battle can handle that point guard spot, and that ended up being the story of that. If Carey is just stuck on this roster right now, you wonder if he's going to get out at all this year.
Yeah, so, yeah, it was a little upsetting to see, especially after Jalen Carey's strong games earlier this season, as you mentioned, that he's become – he's turned into such a reserved role that he's even having trouble getting onto the court.
Yeah, who could have imagined that? I mean, we had people saying before the season, is he going to, like, take Frank's spot this year? And it's not even close.
People love to hate on Frank, man.
Yeah.
So O'Shea Brissett had a tough night. I saw some people...
Tough season.
Yeah, tough season so far. Yeah, you're right. I saw some people on the tweets discussing, and in the Nunes Magician comments section, which we know can be a little bit of a...
It's a place for intellect.
Yeah. So Brissett had a rough night, and I went back and I took a look at the film, and I posted a little Twitter thread about this. I saw what Brissett was doing, and he's getting to the basket. And I think that part of what he's doing, and it might be a little bit in his head, it might be, it might just be that he had some bad luck. You know, what is the sample size of one game after all, right? But he is double clutching a little bit on his attempts at the rim, almost anticipating contact.
Yeah.
Instead of just going up strong and reacting to contact, instead he's going up and like double pumping, and then he ends up just throwing it at the rim. He's leaving a lot of them short. And so part of the problem here is that he's not finishing on his drives. He's getting to the basket and then not finishing. And he's so good at getting there that he could be an element of Syracuse's offense to face up an opponent and just get Syracuse a bucket, like a tough bucket in the paint. And against Miami, albeit it wasn't his style of play, the zone kind of threw him off a little bit. I don't know. You got anything to say about Brissett?
So here's the thing about Brissett. He has had a shift into that power forward role this year, whereas he was playing the wing more last year, taking more three-point shots, playing face-up a lot more. Now he's sort of jamming in with some bigger opponents that are covering him on that defensive end. You know, we really don't think of positions because it's a zone team defensively, but when teams are manning you up on the other end, you know, what position you're playing is going to matter as far as what matchup you're going to get.
He's seeing those power forwards right now. Yeah. You're right.
So he's banging physically with these guys trying to get into the rim. Early in the season, he was trying to work that three-point shot, and it looked so good in the preseason. He had a monster preseason. So we think, you know, this guy's going to take that sophomore leap. Instead, it's been the sophomore slump because that three-point shot fell out of play early. All of a sudden, you see him starting to go downhill more often, and it worked for a stretch. He had a stretch toward the end of non-conference where he was getting downhill toward the basket, and I was liking how he was playing during that stretch. But now he's hitting a wall, and like you talked about right there, it's all about where he's shooting from, you know, the up fakes. Sometimes he's off balance. It looks like he's playing volleyball because when he gets his own rebound off some of those weird first shots, he's able to establish himself. He dunks it. He puts it up with ease. And even when he's putting in the putbacks, he looks so in control under there. But when he's actually setting himself up on the dribble, on the drive, a lot of it's off balance. A lot of it's trying to draw contact. A lot of it's just unnatural. And that's why we've seen him struggling so much throughout the story of ACC play. It's been him not being able to finish inside, which for a body like him, for a finisher like him, some of the dunks you see him have is just frustrating to see sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, he had a nice, little nicer performance against the, or in the Virginia Tech game.
Let's get to that Virginia Tech game.
Yeah,
let's
talk.
That's what the people want.
Yeah, let's talk about it. do we want to talk about it though? Virginia Tech throttles Syracuse 78-56. Is that score right, man? That score's right. Yeah. I'm not mad about it anymore. Let's just talk about let's talk about feelings real fast. I'm not mad about it anymore. I was mad. There was a point I was pretty frustrated. With about 5 minutes left, I was able to, you know, say, you know what, we're moving on. The margin of this victory and loss doesn't matter.
Did you make it through the whole game?
I did make it through the whole game.
Oh God.
So I made it through the whole game and I sucked it up and I said, you know what, bad loss. Virginia Tech shot the lights out. They came ready to play. They gave it to Syracuse. They attacked us like they needed to. They were the better team, and that was just that. It happens. Those games happen. You just got to swallow this pill, and we're moving on. We got two winnable opponents coming up next. We'll get to that more later, too. Two winnable opponents coming up next. Let's just forget about this one, put this one in the past, throw out the game film. It's over. We're moving on. How do you feel about the game?
That's pretty fair analysis for 22. A game they did not cover, by the way, as we said. Yeah. You know, it's funny because they kept Alexander off the score sheet for the most part. 0-6, I think he was in the game. I'm not thrilled about the defense. It broke down at times. The Virginia Tech passing was phenomenal, and they looked like a team that studied the zone, who came in and knew what they had to do against it. They were getting into that high post area, which, as we know, is so important against playing that zone, and then they were able to kick it back out for the secondary passes. So their passing was brilliant from the get-go. Robinson is so good. He is a phenomenal player. One of those no-look passes he had backdoor right by Sidibe's head just caught the whole 5-2-3 zone off guard. They knew what they had to do, and they just took it to Syracuse from the beginning. And it's, again, that story of you never know what you're going to get from this Orange team. Because last year in this matchup at the Dome, I said, all right, this team has shooters, wings, passers all over the court. Syracuse is going to get destroyed. And then Syracuse came out and destroyed them with a good defensive performance. And then today it's completely the opposite. I've seen them building the offense up. I said that, you know, they could maybe hang with this team. He had 35 points. Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
So I thought they could hang with this team, and they could not from the early minutes. They had one good 10-point stretch at a half that they were able to get within 9 points. And that was that for the whole game. I mean, the Hokies just completely controlled the pace of this game. Completely shut out Syracuse's offense. You had some interesting thoughts about Elijah Hughes, too, who actually had, I thought, his first bad game all season.
Yeah, so talking about Elijah Hughes a little bit here. Now, I want to be careful with how I phrase this because I'm not saying that Elijah Hughes is figured out. However, it sure looked like Virginia Tech scouted Hughes real well heading into this game. Now, if you looked at how they were playing Hughes, who didn't have a great game, I got a stat line right here. He had 6 points, 4 rebounds, but he also turned it over 4 times.
Yeah.
Virginia Tech was selling out hands up on his three-point shot, his catch-and-shoot three-point shot. And then they were making him put it on the ground.
And, which we never like to see.
And we don't like to see that. And not only were they making him put it on the ground, but they were overplaying his right hand. And it must have been something – I haven't noticed this so far this season, but it must have been something Virginia Tech had noticed, was that he's not as strong with his left hand as he is his right hand. He doesn't go left or confidently dribble towards his left-hand side. And so Virginia Tech did a great job of overplaying him, forcing him into uncomfortable situations, and that ultimately resulted in his 4 turnovers and 2 of 13 shooting. You got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I didn't see a whole lot of the game, but the turnovers, I know exactly the kind of plays that those come on for him. When he's forced to put the ball on the floor, start moving downhill in the basket, or even making plays, that can be an area that's a struggle for him. He's so good at playing off the other guys when he can just spot up and shoot. And that's the Virginia Tech defense, pressure, pressing. They really make you force the issue when you get the ball. There's not going to be a lot of space and comfort playing against this team, especially in that building. One of the better buildings in the ACC, I think, from what I saw last night. It was a very tough environment on the court, in the crowd, and Syracuse folded against that pressure. The turnovers killed them, and that started and ended with Hughes. I will say, on a night like 3-10 for Battle, what do you think they were able to do to hold him off? He's been scoring 30 points, player of the week of late. He has had slow starts recently in the Pittsburgh game, in the Miami game, but then he shoots out for the second half, but they held him down all game long.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that building and the energy, man. So Buzz Williams, obviously one of the more energetic coaches, you know, he injected that energy into his players, who injected that energy into the crowd, and man, that environment became a tough place to play. And like you're saying with Battle, the Syracuse guards in the first half, and this was something that really frustrated me. You have your two Tyus isn't a senior, but you have your two leaders on your team in Frank Howard and Tyus Battle, and neither of them were able to effectively respond to the pressure that Virginia Tech was applying.
Yeah.
And so once your team starts, you know, reeling a little bit from this pressure, Tyus and Frank couldn't right the ship for the team in the first half. And that resulted in Syracuse going down by 19 points at halftime. They never fully controlled the pace, controlled the game, held the ball. The offense looked out of sync. And not only that, but while Syracuse was having a really difficult time scoring on the offensive end, Virginia Tech was torching the zone. And when you have a team that is just scoring bucket after bucket and you can't get anything going on the offensive end, there is no coming back from that.
Yeah, when you go down 20, there's really not a great chance to come. I don't want to be DeAndre Ayton saying when you go down early, you're not coming back, as he did earlier this year. But, you know, it's a tough position to be in, especially when your offense struggles. When you go down by that much, you're going to start pressing, and then that's an issue for the Orange in general. When they start pressing, their offense looks horrific. You know, they need to play with the lead. They need to play with some comfort and flow. And they weren't able to get out of the 60-point range in this game, which shows, you know, you build that deficit for yourself, it's going to just further compound your offensive issues. I don't want to overreact to this loss, as you did neither, because, you know, the team said it and we know it ourselves. The ACC is ridiculous, and this team has lost 2 games itself in ACC play. So they're both in the same boat right now, even though, you know, they've done it to Virginia and
UNC.
North Carolina rather than Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech. But you're always going to run into a challenge in this conference, especially in these road games. And I've liked Syracuse's poise on the road so far. I'm just wondering, my last question out of this game, would you have gone to Cary for a little bit longer than they did?
Oh, yeah. So you know what? That draws up an interesting point. So Cary came into the game, right, and he subbed out Elijah Hughes, who had been struggling. And it was pretty clear that Hughes had been struggling in the first half. But what I saw was that they subbed in Cary, but then he started playing off the ball. Frank and Tyus were still bringing it up the floor, which I have no problem with. But if you're going to sub in Jalen Cary, what is he coming in for if he's playing off the ball? He's at this point in his career, and this is no knock on him because he's a freshman, you know, trying to get used to the college speed, the college game style. But right now, all he is a ball-dominant facilitator. And, I mean, yes, he could score one-on-one against good defense,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you don't see what the use for him is off the ball.
Right, off the ball. And so they sub him out for Hughes, and he's playing off the ball. And so I get taking out Hughes there for a minute, giving him a breather, but Carey got some extended run there in the first half, and it was pretty curious to me, like, get Hughes his breather and then get him back out on the floor. Syracuse isn't winning this game with the way Virginia Tech was playing offense. Syracuse isn't winning this game without Elijah Hughes knocking down some three-pointers. And then you leave Elijah Hughes on the bench for a while. He doesn't come in until about a minute or two left in the half. He never got a rhythm. And not saying that maybe he wouldn't have found his rhythm, but you got to give him a chance. He's Syracuse's best scorer.
Especially in a game like that where things aren't working on the forefront, you got to go to plan B. And this guy has to be utilized in some way. He's a talented player. He can handle the ball. He can finish. He can rebound. He can shoot here or there. We just haven't seen a lot of them this year, and you can't leave cards on the off the table in a game like this where the first plan isn't working. You go down by 20. You're going to need something else to work.
That's funny. Did you hear in the press conference following the game, someone asked Jim Boeheim, he goes, hey, Jim, did you keep anything back here? Was there anything you didn't roll out? Jim Boeheim just laughs at the
question.
I like
that question.
He goes, what do you think, man? yeah, I'm saving it for later. Jim's great in his press conferences, and if you don't watch him on YouTube following the games, you definitely need to. James Zuba will post the post some on his YouTube channel. Syracuse Basketball also posts it on theirs. But breaking down the second half, we'll take this snapshot right here. The snapshot, the silver lining, if you will, where Syracuse had that 11-0 run to open the half. And so what I saw there, to revisit that Frank Howard and Tyus Battle conversation, where they weren't stepping up in the first half, they really stepped it up there in that 11-0 stretch. And so they're taking control of the ball, initiating the offense, and the whole team benefited as a result.
Yeah, and I saw a lot of downhill action there, too. They were penetrating to the interior. Brissett had a nice finish inside, spinning inside there in that stretch. And that's what they needed. They needed to open up the floor somehow for themselves and give themselves an outlet for offense, and that starts on the interior. If you're just chucking up shots, you know, you might hit one here or there, but it's not a reliable way to get back into the game. You need to set a baseline for yourself to start getting back into it, and they did with free throws. There was a flagrant foul in there somewhere that was pretty important, and they gave themselves a chance at that point. It's just, when you're down 20, it's so hard to keep that momentum rolling on the road.
Yeah, for sure. So Syracuse did cut the lead to 8. And in that stretch, we also saw Syracuse, you know, step up on the defensive end a little bit, where Virginia Tech was swinging the ball left to right, getting it inside, kicking it back out for open three after open three. Gosh, that was frustrating, man. Mm-hmm. But during that stretch, and I remember one possession in particular, Syracuse was closing out effectively on every rotation. Like, Virginia Tech would try to swing pass it, Syracuse would be there. They would try to skip pass it, Syracuse would be there closing out. And the defense was running around like madmen, but they were doing a great job taking away the three-point shots, and that was such a key there. But ultimately, I mean, outside of those 5 minutes or so, Virginia Tech was just, you know, moving Syracuse around however they wanted to.
It was brilliant ball movement.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal.
Yeah, credit Buzz Williams and his team. Like, they were ready. I mean, we can have that conversation about how much time they had to prepare versus how much time Syracuse had to prepare.
Oh, yeah.
But they were ready to play. They had the zone figured out from the get-go. Justin Robinson was an animal out there, not only with his scoring, but he was in the face of our guards on the defensive end. He was talking a little smack, I saw. I think the announcers mentioned that him and Frank Howard played on the same AAU circuit, so maybe a little history there. It was a good game by Virginia Tech. Like, you got to give them credit.
And again, on the scheduling, this is part of a 3-game road trip. Only 3 teams in the ACC have that, so Syracuse didn't get helped out with that as they go to BC on Wednesday at 8, and then they're on to Pittsburgh again on next Saturday. So this whole week they're going to be off campus.
Right. And so you're talking the scheduling. And so Virginia Tech played on Monday, big Monday against UNC, where they got blown out by 20 points. But then they had a full 5 days to prepare for Syracuse. And Jim Boeheim talked about this in his post-game press conference as well. Syracuse played on Thursday.
Oh, that was a tough turnaround.
Yeah, right? Syracuse plays on Thursday? Was it Thursday?
Yeah, and then they hopped on the plane on Friday afternoon, And so they're in Virginia. They kind of had the James Duba trip themselves.
Yeah, right?
So they were in Virginia that Friday. You know, you sleep there that night, and then you're hopping into the game the next night. So, you know, you kind of have 24 hours there, but it's tight. Not a lot of preparation time coming off Miami.
Yeah, yeah. Couple more storylines from this game. Slow defensive rotations. We kind of got into that a little bit. Lester Marietta in the Noon's Magician comment section, he actually commented on one of my articles to, you know, expand upon one of the points that I had made. And he said that Syracuse was collapsing a little bit too much when the ball got inside the zone, rather than staying out on the three-pointers and relying on Chukwu or Sidibe, who played the majority of the games at center, rather than letting them guard the basket for them and staying out on the shooters, they were collapsing, and it was pitch out, shot.
Yeah.
Over and over.
And that's where you're going to get killed on the corners, is when the defense collapses like that, which was interesting because that's how you beat Duke, as Duke missed every three-pointer.
Right.
But Virginia Tech just has so many shooters,
not
down with Robinson, that that's not going to work in this matchup. And it just shows how diverse the ACC is. How, you know, it's kind of cliche. They talk about how great the ACC is up and down. But you have a team like this that can space out the floor and move the ball. You have a team like Duke that just overpowers you on the interior with top-end talent. And then you have a team like Georgia Tech that, you know, Syracuse hasn't been the only one to struggle against them to this point. You know, Virginia Tech won by three against them. They almost beat Duke over the weekend. That team's tough in their own right with their defense and the rotations and the mixed looks that they throw out there. So every single opponent you're facing here is going to give you a little bit something different. And it's so interesting. It gives you a chance to pad your resume a little bit if you're able to take advantage of it. And it's fun to watch.
Yeah, for sure. Virginia Tech, third best three-point shooting team in the country by percentage.
They're prolific.
Coming into this game. And then you combine that with their ball movement, man. Syracuse might not, on Syracuse's best offensive night, Syracuse might not have kept up with Virginia Tech last night. So O'Shea Brissett bounced back a little bit. He had 16 points and 7 rebounds.
Yep.
And
decent game.
My takeaway here, this was a game style that suited Brissett. Mm-hmm. He was able to face up defenders, you know, catch inside.
Smaller team.
Yeah, smaller team, catch the ball inside the three-point line, and just go right at his defenders. It was a little more physical style, and he was playing aggressively. It was good to see. 16 points again, 7 rebounds. Good performance. My question about last night, where was Marek Dolezal?
I saw him for a little bit. One shot, though. You don't like to see that. And he doesn't take a lot of shots per game, but you do want to see him out there a little bit just to settle down the offense, because we know what his best attribute is. It's that secondary passing. It's the secondary ball handling. And I think with the minutes that he was out there, he was just left kind of running back and forth in the transition game a little bit too much. The game sped way above where Syracuse wanted to be played at.
Right. And, yeah, my problem there was Virginia Tech was throwing all this ball pressure at Syracuse.
Yeah, and that gets the game going.
And then we were playing 4-on-5 on the offensive end. Rather than throwing Dolezal in there, who is another capable player with the ball in his hands, mm-hmm. we need that fifth player against a team that applies such heavy ball pressure, especially when we're struggling.
Yeah, I think that's a good second guess. And I didn't like Carey not playing as much as, you know, the shit started to hit the fan there. You got to kind of go down your secondary options, your bench. Buddy Boeheim didn't play a lot in this game either, in a game where you could have used some offense. So interesting how he relied on those five starters for 35 minutes or so up and down the board there. But, you know, nothing worked. Virginia Tech played a game so prolific that I don't think too many adjustments would have helped them too much there to at least win in that sense.
Right.
Let's go on to what's going on the rest of the week. Get into this team's resume a little bit at this point, because that could have been, you know, a March sealer there, another win over a top 10 team. They missed that opportunity. There'll be more to come. But, you know, you're not playing Virginia Tech these next two games, but you are playing two teams that could beat you.
Yeah, for sure. And Boston College actually riding two straight victories, one on their home floor against Florida State, and they also maybe at home against Wake Forest.
And Kai Bowman is going to be a first-round pick.
Kai Bowman is the truth, man. And so a place, so we're going, again, to Virginia Tech. To Boston College,
yeah.
Somewhere that Syracuse has struggled recently.
Yeah, even though it's not a very overwhelming atmosphere, it's a hockey stadium, first and foremost. The team's good. That's what it is. You know, you have pick and roll guys who can finish there, and Popovic and Stefan Mitchell, I believe his name is. So two decent big men who have stepped up for them. They are a tough team. You know, they don't have Jerome Robinson. If they had him, forget about it. Syracuse is probably losing this game. But Kai Bowman has stepped up. He's double-digit points every night. He's double-digit rebounds. He's one of the best shot blockers for his size in the country, as I was looking into that with Elijah Hughes. And he defends at a high rate, too. That guy is just so much fun to watch.
Yeah, so we'll be breaking down that game a little bit more in depth later this week. We'll throw a podcast up there. We try to get like these 10, you know, 12-minute podcasts out there where I'll be previewing the games. Maybe, Bobby, you can get in on a couple of these if you got time yourself. Try to loosen them up a little bit and break down what we're expecting to see from Boston College and Pittsburgh later on in the week.
Yeah, and we've seen Pittsburgh, so you know what you're expecting there a little bit.
Right. So the Pete isn't an easy place to play. If they're getting up for it. And Pitt just sold out their game against Duke. We go to Pitt on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Saturday game, it's on ESPN2. Nighttime game. I kind of expect Pitt to, you know, bring a crowd. What do you think?
I don't know what kind of crowd they're bringing, but their team's so much better this year. And it's so different, too, when I went to that game last week. You know, Wilson Frames is back. Who's a solid player coming back from last year. But everybody else is different. You know, they have nice balance on both ends of the floor. The defense is solid for them. The offense isn't anything to write home about. But I look at them and I say, you know, last year they couldn't win an ACC game. This year, I think they're the most average team in the conference, which, you know, it sounds like an insult. But after you don't win a game, that's a big step up.
For sure.
You know, shout out to what they've done there.
Yeah, definitely. That quick turnaround, Jeff Capel deserves a lot of credit, right? He really, you know, just established his culture right away. And from what I'm reading, Pittsburgh, the community and the fans are really rallying around that.
Yeah, and they need to get players in there quickly with all the players who left after their last coach's exodus. It was really could have been a disaster scenario there. In fact, I think Miami's going through what they went through with Hernandez being ineligible to play, and they lost NBA talent, and they had zero recruits.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, that's you tough. Know, that should have been what happened to Pittsburgh, and instead it happened to Miami, and Miami's probably going to finish last in the conference because of it. Pittsburgh, maybe an NIT team this year.
Yeah,
that would be a huge step for them.
They're coming off three straight losses. They actually play at Clemson on Tuesday, so it could be four straight losses before they play us at home. That's tough, but that's the ACC. That's not really an indictment on what they have put together. They're 12-8 this season.
They do have a marquee win too in non-conference. If I can remember, it was Florida State actually was the marquee win, and they competed well in non-conference with West Virginia and some other challenging teams, Iowa. Yeah, so they're better.
Yeah.
I don't think their team, Syracuse, should lose to. We'll probably be panicking a little bit if that happens. But, you know, I'm feeling good about what they've got going so far. I think this team's still on course to make March Madness. I think they've started to differentiate themselves a little bit from last year's team, Syracuse this is. And we'll see what they're made of in two more road games. No road win's going to be a bad win. So keep taking care of business and we'll talk to the people again next week, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, as you were saying, Syracuse actually has the eighth toughest heading into this Virginia Tech game, or before the Virginia Tech game, that is. Syracuse had the eighth toughest schedule remaining, and so these wins are going to be wins that we are going to need to pick up, because then we face the likes of Duke, we face the likes of Virginia, UNC.
Yeah, that schedule, and the year's a monster.
Yeah, so it's going to be pretty brutal down the stretch. Syracuse is going to need these games, so make sure you're staying tuned, following the blog, at Noons Magician on Twitter, following myself and Bobby. I'm at DFines31 on Twitter. Bobby?
At Real Bob Manning.
At Real Bob Manning. We'll have articles coming up this week on the Noons Magician blog. We'll be talking, breaking down the games for you guys, previewing the games. You got anything else, Bobby?
Nothing. Nada. We're on to BC.
On to BC. All right. Thanks for tuning in, guys, and let's go Orange.